Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. I'm your host, as always, Anthony Wilhelms. And with me, as always, are Mike Steppy and Adam Longley. Got a lot to cover, and we've been away for a little bit. So Mike, will you kick us off by giving us an update on what's going on with the CPI, or Consumer Price Index, and what that might signal for inflation going forward?
The market seems really interested right now in the Consumer Price Index. So that's probably the key release that comes out. And this month, it was up 0.2% in July. And when you look at that over the past 12 months, it's up 3.2%. The interesting part to me was that shelter costs contributed over 90% of the increase for the month. So when you step back and look at this, the news is relatively good. We see rent costs when you watch the more leading indicators of that, like the Zillow research and things like that, where you can get a little bit more real-time look at that. Those numbers are coming down. So when you look at this longer term, you feel pretty positive. The core CPI was also up 0.2% in July. That's sticky, up 4.7% over the past 12 months. And you'd have to say, as you look at this, the news is that inflation remains sticky, but it is coming down. And that's what the Fed has been targeting. So it's good news.
As you expand the scope of that to broader financial markets, what have you been seeing over the last few weeks?
Question. What we've seen is interest rates have shifted higher to the higher end of the trading range. When you look at a five-year Treasury note as an example, it seemed like it had a hard time getting above four. And then when it got above four, it sort of jumped to 4.25. This morning, we were trading at 4.26. And that's generating a positive real return after taxes and after inflation. When you look at that, if you take a 4.26, you take 1.5% out to pay taxes, you take 2.5% off for inflation longer term, and you look and you still got a positive return. So when you invest in a five-year Treasury, you've got a real return. You know, you're increasing the purchasing power of your investments if you have that. So that's been good. In general, interest rates shifted up, 2 years up, 5 years up, 10 years up. So the whole curve has shifted higher. Equity markets have leveled off, but remain pretty positive. I would sort of highlight four trends that we've seen over the summer. The first is that early in the year, the S&P 500, the biggest stocks in that index, did really well. And what we've seen over the summer is the equal-weighted index is now outperforming the cap-weighted S&P 500. So that's good. It's broadening out the who's doing well. Second thing, value stocks have started to outperform growth over the summer. Small and mid-cap stocks are outperforming large cap, again, getting a broader participation. And international emerging markets are outperforming international developed, again, over the summer months. So we've seen an uptick there. So those are all positive sort of things that you look at. The dollar has retreated off a 20-year high last September, but it seems to have stabilized over the summer months, where we had a low in mid-July, but we sort of bounced back. And it's being helped by interest rate differentials. Again, as U.S. interest rates have moved up, the spread between the yield on a 10-year U.S. Treasury at 4.13 and a German Bund at 2.61 is over 150 basis points. So that's a positive in here for the dollar. Oil prices have rallied. We're near the highs that we've seen in the past year. So we've had an interesting summer.
I love it. That's I have a bunch more questions for you there, but I'm going to stick on one related to interest rates. And it seemed like you were explaining that the 5 year is now at a positive return net of inflation and taxes. Obviously, the 1 year is at a more positive return given the inverted yield curve and those yields pushing up over or at 5%. Does it seem to you that we will see those shorter term rates fall down below the 5 year at some point, or is there room for the 5 year to get above the shorter term rates?
I would say more likely that the short rates would come down as the Fed sort of is in this battle with inflation, and that's what's caused them to push rates up. As inflation comes down, the Fed will is seems like right now they're sort of shifting into neutral, but we're not there yet. They haven't there's still a potential that they could do one more rate increase. I don't think so, but I think that's still out there. But you look at it in general, what they've been hoping for is that inflation would come down, and that's what we're seeing. So I think that's a positive. I think over time, short rates will come down, and we'll get back to a normal, positively sloped yield curve. But that is going to take a while.
All right, Adam, I'm going to come to you with a question about recession and maybe link in some of Mike's thoughts about interest rates. It seems like if we look back 4 or 5 months ago, as the short rates were going up, the world was forecasting we'd be in a recession and the Fed was going to have to cut short rates by about this time this year, or maybe within a few months. That hasn't happened, it seems. Is one of the paths that we do still go into a recession, and might that be the reason that we see the Fed cut those shorter term rates?
That's a really interesting question. It's the most anticipated recession, and it so far has failed to materialize. I think at one point, nearly 100% of all economists were predicting a recession inside of 12 months, and it didn't happen. And I think what you can point to is in the past, there's been some pretty good forward-looking indicators that predict a recession, things like inverted yield curve, and they just didn't work this time, or haven't worked yet. And it's, we're in a situation that hasn't happened before with the massive stimulus and different things like that. So will we go into recession in aggregate as a whole economy? It's not clear, but I think what's interesting is you have had parts of the economy, large parts of the economy, have been in a recession. That housing market, that activity has contracted by over 20%. So the housing market has had a recession. If you look at the S&P 500, the biggest publicly traded companies in the U.S., earnings have not grown for several quarters. We have a profitability recession with publicly traded companies, as well as many privately held companies. So you've got this idea that maybe we've had a rolling recession. It just different parts of the economy have been rolling in different, they've got their own cycles of contraction here. And the stars just haven't aligned where it all happened at once. Historically, to get it all to happen at once, you've kind of had to have an event. Some event, whether it's a bubble popping, there has to be some excess in the system, and something has to kind of break that it serves as a catalyst for the whole economy to contract. We just haven't had that. As we sit here now, I don't know that you can point to anything that say, well, that's going to be what causes it. When you look ahead, it isn't always clear what it is, but after it happens, everyone can point to it and say, well, yeah, right. It was the housing market. It was the banking system. It was COVID. So as we sit here today, the honest answer is, I don't know. Inside of 6 months, it's highly unlikely, I think. Things still look pretty good. But we that's why the market, scrutinizes this monthly data we get, and every data point sends the market up and down as everyone's looking for these clues.
Well, I appreciate your perspective and honesty. And it's just funny to think back to the forecasting, whether it's from, and I mean this broader market, not us internally, inflation a few years ago when it was zero forever, and the bigger risk, and I'm using air quotes of bigger risk, was deflation and inflation. We saw where that went next. And then this, like how you say it, the most predicted recession that didn't happen so far, at least. Well, maybe you could put some context around where we are in the health of the economy by looking at Q2 earnings, both maybe for the S&P, but just more broadly, the state of business and what it tells us going forward, Adam.
Yeah, we would say second quarter earnings, which has largely been completed. Companies have reported. We said the earnings were good, but not great. Good means they were better than we expected, but great means they weren't great by historical standards. So if you look at the second quarter, sales were pretty much flat We had a slight growth, but largely flat. And then earnings actually contracted again, this time by 4% year over year. And the expectation was that they would contract by about 6%. So that's why it was better than expected. But, you know, what's implied there is as earnings contract more than on flat sales is that margins continue to contract. So if you think about, we're in an environment where there's still a lot of inflation. Prices are still being raised and companies are unable to increase their earnings. And so even though they're raising prices, their input costs are being inflated, increasing even more. And a lot of that for most companies in our economy is wages. And so that employment market being so strong is really supporting wage growth, and that's hurting the profitability of these companies. And so we think we potentially are at a point where companies are going to run out of pricing power. And as they look at how, if we can't raise prices and we can't grow sales, you know, what other levers do we have to pull to maintain or save some of our profitability? And a lot of companies are going to look at that labor line and say, maybe we need to let some people go or not hire as much. And so we'll see. But that's definitely what we're watching the next couple of months here.
That'll be really interesting. And I was going to come back to Mike with a question related to housing, but labor and wages probably play into this one. I think Adam mentioned that housing has been weak in terms of sales and that from a demand or a actual transaction volume might be in a recession. But Mike, you mentioned, and you correct me if I missed the detail here related to CPI, that a big part of the increase in inflation is still due to housing prices or values. And so maybe there's a disconnect right now between activity and prices. Is that a product of people just not moving because their mortgages are still really low? And the idea of going into a new house at a 6.5% or 7% mortgage still pushes up that cost of housing a lot?
Absolutely, that's playing into this. And you're seeing it in the employment statistics because what people aren't relocating because of that. When you look at the first 6 months of 2023, the non-farm payroll number in terms of new jobs created averaged 270,000 per month. In June, it was 185,000. In July, it was 187,000. So we've seen a real slowing there. And I think part of what you're saying is part of that, that because housing, it means that you want to stay where you are longer. That plays into this.
It's really interesting to think of what a reduction in interest rates would do broadly. I mean, historically, a reduction in interest rates has pushed up home values, but in at least is my experience. But is your take, Mike, that the ability for people to relocate if interest rates came down to, say, mortgages at 4%, it might actually have downward pressure on houses as more inventory came online?
That could be a part of this. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate your perspective on all of it. Mike, I'm going to stay with you while we talk about rates and things like that and this upcoming Fed meeting. What are your thoughts on what we're going to see here in September?
At the September meeting, they're going to review the data and they're going to see that the employment was slowing, you know, still growing, but slowing. They're going to see that inflation is coming down. And I think they're going to wait a meeting to do anything. So I think they're in a mode where they'll at least skip a meeting. So that'll push the decision out to probably the beginning of November would be the next meeting, November 1st. And I think there's a small probability that they'll increase at that point. My overall feeling is that they're probably done. But if you got some spike up and some surprise with regard to inflation, they could do another move. But I think that's a lower probability.
That makes sense. Adam, coming over to you with an equity question. We watched the first part of the year, five stocks drive all of the return, it felt like. And it was great if you owned those five stocks. If you didn't, it felt like you were just watching someone else play the game. Now things seem to be turning, as Mike mentioned in his update on the market. Can you speak to some more specifics of what's going on?
Yeah, I think maybe a good way to look at it is the S&P 500 is now off the highs, call it around 3%. And in over that time frame, tech is down over twice as much. So tech's down over 7%. And what's done really well is energy has appreciated. So I think part of that is, you know, before that, tech was, as you mentioned, tech was up over 40%, and energy hadn't really participated. Energy was kind of flat. So it is a little reversal. But what I think is supporting energy stocks here is oil's been trading pretty good. And the valuation of these energy companies had also gotten pretty cheap and attractive. If you think about energy stocks, many of them have limited growth prospects, whether it's regulatory or other issues. So there's as they generate a lot of cash, often what they'll do is, in contrast to a fast-growing tech company, is they'll pay big dividends. You know, they'll return the money to shareholders, pay dividends, repurchase stock. I think in this environment, as things settle down, that greater certainty of that part of the total return picture becomes more attractive. That's a nice tailwind for energy stocks. And then just in general, this industry, the energy industry, has been showing better capital discipline. They used to get rewarded for CapEx and for growth. And then the market kind of pushed back and said, the returns just aren't there. So there's now a greater focus on these dividends, and the stocks are being rewarded as well. And then inflation, in this inflationary environment, a company like an oil company that largely harvests and brings to market a commodity that benefits from inflation should also be should be a nice tailwind. And just think about you know, some of the headwinds, the energy was this anticipation of the recession. If you get a recession, that's going to lower the demand for things like oil. Always does, you know, you're less likely to fly and things like that. So as now we've kind of gotten signals that the outlook is better and there's no recession, that's positive for demand. And you've seen the oil price respond, and a lot of these energy stocks that have pretty high beta to oil prices have done really well. So, you know, energy is starting to trade really good. Much better than tech. And we think that's a trend that potentially could continue.
So, Ed, I'm going to ask a question that you might just tell me I'm wrong directionally on. And that's okay. It'll be an Anthony curiosity. It seems like in 2022, energy companies generally did well relative to the rest of the market. And that was in a time where we had a lot of inflation. And tech, because, at least from my interpretation, their earnings are in the future. So those future earnings are diluted when we had strong inflation. Now that we may be seeing a similar trend right now in terms of the valuations for these companies, energy doing well and tech having a tougher time, is there any signal in that noise that maybe inflation could come in a little hotter and that the market is pricing better on energy stocks than tech because of that?
Yeah, I think you got something there. Maybe it's more helpful to look at long-term inflation expectations versus what inflation was last month. And so the long-term expected inflation has been pretty steady and ticking up a little bit. And I think that speaks to the preference for energy over tech.
Okay. I appreciate you humoring my question there, Mike. I'll come to one to you that you always have a good answer on is where on the yield curve should people be, or are we looking, or what looks attractive? And by yield curve, I mean, what maturities look best? Should we be staying short as rates are more appealing there, or are people getting a little longer on that?
I think this is a good time because you've got real returns that are positive. So you actually can increase the purchasing power of your money. And so I'm looking out in that 5 to 7 year area. And I think at some point, you don't know when that is, but at some point the Fed is going to bring overnight interest rates back down. And that's going to make it look more attractive. And so it's okay to roll short term, but you got to realize that that's vulnerable to going down. And so I think there's just more potential to, at this point in the cycle, to lock in rates and have that security of knowing, hey, I've got a 4% yield, or I've got a 5% yield on this. I think that's more attractive.
Well, guys, I am liking some of this messaging that, Mike, we might get back to an upward sloping yield curve where longer term maturities someday are higher paying than short term maturities. Adam, my favorite line of the day is the most forecasted recession that didn't happen. That feels pretty good to make it through summer in this environment as we start looking to get back to school and all the fun things that come with football season starting. It's great to be back with you both. Thank you. And Mike, I'll turn it to you for some parting thoughts.
I think right now you've got to watch these labor agreements and see UPS had a big labor agreement. And I think you've got to watch and see what that does to cost structure for companies. So that's what I'm watching.
Adam, parting thoughts from you.
Yeah, looking at the equity market, strong appreciation. It's really been driven by multiple expansion, not earnings. That means people today are willing to pay more for earnings than they were a couple months ago. At some point, that has to change. You have to have fundamentals. You have to have growth to justify continued strength, more upside from here. And we talked about some of the headwinds, difficulty in raising prices. And so at this point, I think you need to take a hard look at what you're paying for earnings and maybe shift your portfolio towards more attractively valued companies. And if you have some stocks that have done really well and maybe the positions have appreciated to double or triple what you were originally comfortable with, might be time to rebalance and look at your individual equity holdings.
Well, I appreciate it from both of you. Thank you to our audience for joining us. And we'll be back with you again in a couple of weeks.